Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. Our chance to get together each week and find out what's new and what's going on and what's trending in the tech world from a blind or partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, please do. We'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll hear how Hubert Pavelkovich got on when he visited the WeWalk Smart Cane event in London. Plus, we'll be hearing from Toby Davy, who's been finding out about a new photography exhibition that aims to use AI to make images more accessible, which sounds very interesting. Hubert, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran joining me as usual this week. Hubert, apart from this, what's going on with WeWalk, anything else caught your attention this week?
Well, so I've been on the hunt for something that someone once suggested to me when they saw my yellow pocket rocket guide dog, Mr. Caesar, and they said, you really should be tracking his fitness, his, you know, distances and steps and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been intrigued as to how to do that. Well, someone has recommended me something I've now purchased, which is coming today as of this recording, the PitPat. Is arriving soon.
I've heard of this.
And yep. this is a fitness tracker for dogs. And you can attach it to their collar. And there's two versions of it. There's one with GPS and there's one without. There's £100 difference between the two. So that's worth considering. I've bought the non-GPS version for £48. And it tracks distance, calories, and also steps, apparently. And you can put in kind of your dog's breed as well and get recommendations as to what to do. You can get badges as well. It sounds quite fun. I've been warned that accessibility is there, but it can be a bit tricky to flick. You might have to do a more touching around the screen. However, yes, that is my latest tech purchase, the PitPat, which hopefully I can report on quite soon.
I think the world has gone mad.
Absolutely it has.
That's the fun that, though, isn't it?
You know.
Why do you need to track your dog's fitness?
Because I'm nosy. I'm curious. I've mainly ordered this purely out of fascination to see how good this actually is and what it actually, you know, it gives you an understanding of something you maybe don't necessarily need, but I'm curious. It's more out of curiosity than anything. I mean, I don't think I need to track his fitness desperately. I don't think he has any issues with that. But, you know, it's quite interesting to see how it does it and, you know, how it works out of pure fascination.
How are you going to relay this information to Caesar? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I was wondering that.
I mean, I don't think Caesar quite frankly cares.
I'm sure
to be
he
fair.
Doesn't.
You know, he's just there, like, as long as he's fed and he's got a bed and a bit of running around, he's happy.
Right, come on, Caesar, you've not hit your goals for this for today.
Yeah.
Get out more into the garden.
You've only got 8,000 steps. What are you doing? I did used to have this many years ago when I had Iggy. I'm glad it sounds like it's improved quite a bit because accessibility when I had it was not great. I had to get quite a bit of sighted help to see the info on it. But it's kind of fascinating, to be fair. It's basically a dog's Fitbit.
Basically, yeah. I mean, I've heard from a VI voiceover user who said to me, you know, they manage, and they said to me apparently that, you know, they're less kind of techie. So they said if they can manage it, I can manage it. So we'll see. I'm hoping it is because I don't, you know, I'd like this to actually be a good investment. But yeah, we'll see.
Natalie, anything new with you? I know you've got a cat, haven't you? I wonder if you can get a Fitbit for
that. I know he's strong because when I pick him up, I can feel it. So I'm not worried about that. I have tried attaching ear tags to his collar before, but he ditches them. But yeah, what caught my attention this week was an announcement from Humanware about the Braille Note Touch. And those of you who don't know, I'm a bit of a maths geek. So I was interested to hear they've updated their maths feature on the Braille Note Touch. So it used to be that if you're writing in a standard sort of Word file, and you wanted to do some maths, you'd have to come out of your document into Key Math, do your equation, and it used to be a limit of you could only do up to 13 lines. Don't know if that's still there, but you do maximum 13 lines of maths, and then you'd copy and paste or insert that section of maths back into your Word document. And then if you wanted to edit it, you had to pick it back up, so to speak, put it back into Key Math, edit it, and then paste it back into Word. And I just thought, it's great that you've got maths being sort of more accessible, but it was far too faffy. I think most teachers loved it because it made maths look pretty and accessible to them, but most pupils hated it because it was a complete pain rather than just writing something out in the same document or on a Perkins or whatever their preferred method normally would be. But this update says that you no longer have to come out of the Word document in order to do your maths. You can stay in the document. And I thought that's good. That's quite a big improvement. I think you still need to toggle maths on and off. I thought that's much less faffy than having to jump between documents all the time. And then the second question that occurred to me was, okay, that's all very well and good. That's your braille going or your maths going out the way. But what about maths coming into you from teacher to pupil? And they've made an update there as well. So if a teacher or at university, it could be a lecturer or whoever, is giving the student or the pupil work, if they use MathML, which I have explored a little bit myself before, they and they use MathML to make their maths in whatever document they use, and then they give it to the student, they can then read it as well without any difficulty. I'm not 100% sure if they can edit it. I don't think the notification specified that. But I thought they're quite significant updates and could really make a huge difference to the maths nerds of the world.
Yeah, that is interesting actually, because and the reason why I find it interesting is basically because the Braille Note Touch and the Plus are so old now. They're running Oreo 8.1 on Android, which, okay, fair enough. If you just use the if you like garden walled software that Humanware provides over the Android device, and you use Keysoft, which most students do, then that's great. But it is layered on an old version of Android, and my issue with that is just the security side of things if you were going to use Android. But the math side of it is interesting because that would be in Keysoft, that would be Key Math. And that is really interesting because I work with pupils who are always looking for ways of, having proper access to math on a braille display. So that is an interesting update.
Yeah, I think for me, it's nice to know that that is still being updated, to be honest, because I just hear Android 8 and I think, oh, nah, okay. But obviously, this doesn't change anything, I would assume, doesn't change anything from the Android side, but it's nice to know there's still developments going on with that.
Yeah, because they're a
Yeah.
lot of money, those devices. And I know the schools, a lot of schools have got them, and that they were expensive note takers and still are if you buy one. But it is good to know that there is some kind of updating still going on.
Well, when I started my maths course at university, I got a Braille Note Touch through Disabled Students Allowance, but I got it as backup, to be honest with you, in case my a Apex properly fell apart, because actually Key Math did not work for me. Because when you hit university, and particularly master's level, you're lucky if your equation is only 13 lines long. And I was using quite advanced stuff by that point, and what I was using was the Unicode tables, and Braille Note Touch had a lot more of them, but they weren't as searchable and you couldn't assign shortcuts. So it was just, for me, a waste of time, to be honest with you. But I thought I need a backup in case something does go wrong. But yeah, so that's why that was really intriguing to me. Fortunately for me, my Apex managed to limp its way through to the end. But yeah.
Jackie, anything new from you this week?
Yeah, I Have been working with a pupil this week who she's using a Brilliant by 40X at where she's at school, and they wanted very much the school to be able to see what she's actually writing on it so they can help her, which is fair enough. But natively, the Brilliant does not have an HDMI port on it. And it only has USB-C for charging, and you can't get a monitor, USB-C monitor either to work on it. So they were looking for a way round this of trying to read and see what she was writing. And it turns out that there is a very useful feature in JAWS, which I knew was there, but I didn't realize. I don't need to use it myself, so I didn't realize just how useful this might be for anybody who's in school using a laptop and JAWS. And if the teacher wants to see what you're writing in print on your Braille device, you can go into JAWS options Braille, and there is something in there called Braille and text viewers. And you can have it so that the teacher can see the Braille dots as you write them, or you can have it as in this case, the teacher can see the print that you're writing on your Braille display. It comes up in print on the screen. So you just tick in the viewers which one you want, and you just okay in JAWS, and then they are able, it doesn't affect JAWS in any way. It doesn't affect what you're doing as you're using JAWS. It just is really useful if you have somebody who likes Braille input, and the teacher in a class situation can see what they're actually writing because it comes up in print. And I think that's a really useful thing to be able to do if you're in that scenario. And you can do it, as I say, with Braille. You can tick the box for Braille letters coming up in print if you want to see those as well. So that is just a tip that I thought was really handy.
That is really cool, actually. Yeah, very interesting.
That is handy and quite a notable actually downside to the Brilliant. I have to say, I was very taken with the Brilliant when I saw it at a recent event. I thought I quite fancy one of these. I couldn't think of a legitimate reason to buy one, but I did like
Yeah,
it.
no, it's a nice device, but basically it does not have any way, because I checked this out with HumanWare when the school asked me, and I checked it out with HumanWare, and they said categorically no, it does not, you cannot put a monitor on it. There is no HDMI socket, but also you can't even use a USB monitor because there is no HDMI pass through on it at all. So that is, in a way, that is a bit of a downside if you have a pupil who's using a Brilliant and they want to be able to see exactly what they're writing. But that is a way around it if you link the Brilliant to your laptop using JAWS and you want to see the viewer that way. So that it's not perfect, but it's a very good workaround. And I just thought it would be worth mentioning for anybody that listens to this program who perhaps works with young people at schools. That's what you can do, and you can do it with any Braille display as well.
Oh, there you go. The JAWS Braille and text viewer might be useful for you if you're in that situation. So I heard some really big news from Meta at the end of I think this came out at the end of last week that they are creating an SDK, a software development kit, which will allow developers to basically develop apps essentially for the Meta glasses. And this software development kit will give them access to the camera, the microphones, and the speakers. And the first partner that they've announced is Microsoft's Seeing AI, which essentially means that Seeing AI will be coming to the glasses, and it will also be a much more open platform. So I'm thinking, I don't think this is limited to specialist apps. I think pretty much anyone can create an app on there. It does have to be approved by Meta, obviously, but this is really big news, I think, because this opens it up for, say, I mean, obviously, Be My Eyes are already on there, but it gives them more functionality because apparently developers are not restricted to just Meta's AI, which I thought was very surprising. But of course, it opens it up for Aira. It opens it up to, I have no idea if Envision would be interested in this, seeing as they are launching their own product, but they, in theory, could if they wanted to. I think the possibilities with this are pretty endless, really, when it comes to assistive companies and users.
That is big news.
It is, and it sort of at a reasonable price point as well, which is the very important thing about all these glasses and wearable tech. How much, Google are coming out with their XR glasses, maybe at the beginning of the next year. So that is a real game changer. If you've just paid like 300 quid for a pair of Meta glasses, and you can actually get people writing apps that we would kind of use on them. I think that's a big game changer, I think.
The potential with that is fantastic. It's something a lot of people have been waiting for because, we all wanted to use more of these sorts of apps on the glasses, or at least for these apps to use that wearable camera so we don't have to take our phones out of our pockets. It is absolutely game changing and a huge step forward in accessibility. And I think it shows Meta's true commitment to accessibility, which, yeah, that's a big sign. That's a very big statement.
I'm excited, particularly by the seeing you. I think that you mentioned Calm because I know a lot of people use Be My Eyes or Be My AI, but I'm sort of wedded to seeing AI. That's my preferred app. And like you just said, I've always found it slightly frustrating that they don't pair up. So I'm really excited by the thought that actually they're one of the first partners.
So I think they're looking at early to mid 2026 for the launch date of this. So it's not going to be coming anytime soon necessarily, but that's when developers will start to get early access to the kit, to the APIs and everything that they need. So I think kind of midway through next year we'll start to see things come out of that. It's interesting as well, Hubert, you said that about the commitment to accessibility. I honestly don't think, and I've said this before, I don't think Meta, when they brought out these glasses, realised what they had for accessibility.
No, I don't
I
either.
think it's come as a surprise to them, to be honest.
You definitely didn't.
I think it became apparent very quickly how important it is. But yes, I agree that at first they didn't realise, but once they did, they were all about harnessing that.
It puts such a lot of credence to the having these glasses. I think there were people maybe starting to think, oh, I wonder if I should have held off and bought maybe the Solos glasses that Envision are working on. I wonder if I should, just wait because there are so many different wearables coming out now. But I think it really puts a lot of credence on the Meta Ray-Bans if you have a pair. That's really something, to look forward to.
And just one quick kind of last thing to mention on this, because we don't know a huge amount about it yet, other than what we've just been talking about. We don't really know how this is going to work, how you would get these apps on there, what functionality of Scene AI is going to be coming. But obviously, we had the Meta Connect event recently, and the second generation of the Ray-Bans were announced along with the glasses with the display. But this is coming to all the glasses, so you don't have to go out and upgrade your glasses to get this as well. As far as I know, at least, this is coming to all models, which is amazing news.
It's also worth a little side mention that the Meta glasses that have the display will also have their own screen reader as well, which people didn't expect because at first you saw the display glasses and went, ah, that's irrelevant to blind users. But it's very much not irrelevant at all, quite the opposite.
That shouldn't be a surprise, but it really was when I saw that they were going
It
to have a
was a
screen
surprise to
reader.
me. I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
Let's hope they don't do a half-baked screen reader, though, because you find when companies take on accessibility, as we all know, it can be a very half-done thing. I'm not being negative when I say that, but it is true. The TVs, for example, you have LG and Samsung, bless them, have both got accessibility built into their TVs. But it's only half there because if you want to go into some of the apps on the TV that are all there for everyone to access, you can't because they don't work outside the confines of their own menu. So I mean, it's great, and we'll see what happens. But I do hope that it is going to be a bit of a full on rather than just a token accessibility screen reader.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I won't be rushing out to buy them, I don't think, but I am going to watch with interest, I think. Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, another interesting week coming up, as always. Thanks, guys. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk. Recently, Aaron IB held a special event at the Grimaldi building together with WeWalk, the company behind the Smart Cane 2. Hubert Pavalkovich was there and spoke to WeWalk about their products.
I'm Jean Moir, WeWalk's Chief Innovation Officer, so I'm responsible for making sure our products meet the needs of our community. I'm visually impaired myself, a WeWalk user, and it's really great to have been part of such a wonderful event.
Can you tell us how important it is to form partnerships with organisations like WeWalk and the RNIB?
So partnerships are one thing, but forming the right partnerships with the right organisations is a completely different kettle of fish. And I'm really pleased to say on behalf of the entire WeWalk team that we truly have found the right partner with the RNIB. And I think the event was a wonderful reflection of that. It was a reflection of the tremendous amount of work that we've done with the RNIB since 2019 on building our WeWalk products. And that's come to light through things like Smart Cane 2, you know, the world's first smart cane to look and feel like a traditional cane. A lot of that design intention, a lot of the way it functions, again, came through the RNIB. And it's wonderful when organizations like the RNIB, you know, an organization that's had over 150 years of experience with visually impaired people, comes up to you and says, hey, look, you guys have done a good job, and we feel this product is really going to solve that mobility issue.
For those that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about the WeWalk Smart Cane?
So WeWalk was born out of our team's lived and professional experience of visual impairment. Now, we love the standard white cane. We think it's a fantastic tool. But the thing is, it could be improved with a little bit of technology. And so with Smart Cane 2, we've taken a standard white cane, we've chopped off its rubber handle, and we replaced it with the WeWalk handle, which really improves that day-to-day cane experience. So you've got upper body obstacle detection. So no longer are you bumping into low-hanging trees or signs. And you've also got connectivity to the WeWalk smartphone app. So you can put your smartphone in your pocket, use WeWalk's built-in buttons, and then suddenly, hey, you've got to a bus stop, a couple of button presses, and you'll know exactly what bus is coming up next. It's such a convenient tool. And it's actually a really cool one, too. So the fact that I can talk to my cane, I can ask it questions like, where am I? Or take me to the nearest coffee shop. It's just wonderful and just unlocks so many new things for not just ourselves as visually impaired team members, but for our visually impaired community as well.
This is the WeWalk Smart Cane 2. So what are some of the improvements between, you know, the Smart Cane 2 and the previous generation?
So we've made a lot of improvements between Smart Cane 1 and Smart Cane 2. Smart Cane 1 validated the need for a Smart Cane-like product. So it had obstacle detection and smartphone connectivity. And users told us, hey, we actually really, really like this. The thing is, could you make it a bit smaller? And that's exactly what we wanted to do with Smart Cane 2. And it's exactly what we did. So again, after spending a painstaking number of hours was, again, all of our thousands of users, we truly understood what the ultimate smart cane could look like, and that's Smart Cane 2. So it's the world's first smart cane to look and feel like a traditional white cane. It packs even better obstacle detection than our Smart Cane 1, so three different distance levels, vibration or audible feedback. It's a lot more responsive, so you simply use buttons, and within two or three button taps, you can pretty much get to the information that you need. And it's even got AI built in, so you can talk to it, it can talk to you, and you can ask it general knowledge questions. Like, for instance, I was in Frankfurt with the team, we were attending Side City, and I asked WeWalk, hey, what can I do in Frankfurt? And suddenly I became the tour guide, which is always fun. And of course, we've made lots of quality of life improvements as well. So Smart Cane 2 is weather and rain resistant. You can use it come rain or shine. And it's just a device which you can depend on a day-to-day basis. It truly has replaced the standard white cane for many.
As well as the Smart Cane 2, you have also talked to us about the Assist service. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, so this is really exciting and a first in this event. So our WeAssist service, whether you're a Smart Cane user or not, connects you to a professionally trained sighted agent that can help you do the things you want to do, such as read signage or determine the colors of different clothing. And it's all in the WeWalk app. So you simply download the app, click the connect to an assistant button and you'll be connected right away. So for attendees of today's event, we're offering a pre-release, and then on the 1st of October, we'll be launching the service as a beta in the UK. That means anyone can sort of access the WeAssist service free of charge from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on business days to try out the service and to give us feedback. And again, we'd really value that feedback. The entire experience, again, was co-designed with support from the RNIB, including things like the agent training material. So it'll be great to sort of know what you all think about it and to see how we can use WeAssist in new ways.
Fantastic. And if people would like to find out more about the WeWalk products more about you, where can they go to do that?
Of course. So there's lots of information available on our website, www.wewalk.io. We're on YouTube, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. So lots of useful resources there. Lots of text, instruction manuals, videos as well. But if you'd like to purchase a WeWalk, then definitely head over to Sight & Sound Technology, our distribution partner here in the UK. They're wonderful. They're usually at Sight Villages. So if you'd like to get some hands-on time, you can certainly do that at those events. But they also provide our sales support. They provide information on WeWalk. They're on webinars. So just a great partner to have. And definitely head over to them if you're interested in getting your hands on a WeWalk smart game.
Fantastic. Jean-Marc from WeWalk, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Now, one of the more interesting ones is using WeWalk by guide dog users. Joining me now is a guide dog user, Maggie Moore. Maggie, thank you for joining us.
Lovely to be here, Hubert.
So when it comes to WeWalk, it's quite a game-changing product based on what we've learned. How do you feel it's game-changing for blind and partially sighted people?
I think for me, probably the most useful thing about it is the integration with the various transport systems. So it's like having Google Maps on the end of your arm, you know, rather than having to switch between your phone and your cane, you can tell it where you're going. It will navigate you to the bus stop. It will then tell you what time the next bus is coming. It will tell you when it's arrived. It will tell you when it's your stop to get off. So from that point of view, having all of that in one package and part of a traditional cane, I just think is awesome. And the fact that even if the battery dies, it's still a white stick. It's still going to get you from A to B.
I think that's what I found, you know, the very interesting point, that at the end of the day, it can still be used as a cane. It doesn't take away from what the end product is. It only adds to it, which I think is a concern many people have. Now, are there any kind of interesting use cases where maybe you thought, that's an interesting way of using the product that I've not thought of?
So I think one of the things that came out through the user testing, which was an unexpected bonus, was the ability to use the cane to shoreline. So it has inbuilt obstacle detection. So what my guide dog is less reliable at doing is detecting overhead objects. That is something that the smart cane can do. But by twisting the cane through 90 degrees, you can actually use it to guide yourself along the shoreline of a building or parked traffic, for example. So you're not having to keep bashing into the obstacles you're trying to avoid in order to detect the fact that they're there. You are just getting haptic or audio feedback to tell you that they are there, and you're then able to keep yourself the right distance away from them.
You kind of answered my question where I wanted to ask, you know, how do you think using WeWalk can, you know, not be different, but complement the use of a guide dog?
Yeah, so I think guide dogs have the intention to furnish people who are on the waiting list with the WeWalk canes to kind of bridge the gap until they're able to provide them with a dog. But I think, you know, that there are bits of functionality that the cane has that the dog doesn't have that potentially those users will miss when they get their guide dog. I've been asking WeWalk to think about developing, you know, a third iteration, which might perhaps go onto the handle of the guide dog harness, so that you'll have all that functionality and the use of the guide dog, which, as we know, has a lot of benefits over and above a cane.
Yes, I think that'd be quite interesting because that way people get to have the same benefits regardless of whatever mobility aid they choose to use. Because at the end of the day, I think, you know, would you agree that the main point is that blind and partially sighted people have the choice as much as possible as to what they wish to use to aid their mobility?
Exactly. I mean, you know, who says that just because you own a bicycle doesn't mean you can't have own a car? You know, sighted people have all those options available to them. Why shouldn't we? That's my hobby horse. I just think, you know, choice is everything and we deserve choice just as much as the sighted public.
Now, you've mentioned the idea of having a clip-on tool to the guide dog harness, which can have the functionality of WeWalk. Are there any other kind of future developments that, you know, you're looking forward to seeing with WeWalk?
So I love the fact that you can operate your phone from the handle of the cane as currently configured, and they are enhancing that all the time. So I'm looking forward to that improving further and actually being able to enable you to access all the functionality of the phone, because I'm sure they will do that down the line. They are very responsive to user feedback and they do develop it as fast as humanly possible.
Fantastic. Maggie Moore, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you, Hubert. It's been a pleasure.
Joining me now is RNIB's Head of Inclusive Design, Robin Spinks. Robin, thank you very much for joining us.
It's great to be with you, Hubert.
Now, we've seen news about this great partnership and indeed other partnerships that WeWalk have. How important and how much of an impact these sorts of partnerships create, do you think?
Well, you know, mobility is critical. It's absolutely fundamental to anything that any of us want to do as a blind or partially sighted person. So we're taking an opportunity today really to celebrate a fantastic partnership, to celebrate what we've achieved, but also to look forward, to engage with the audience, and in the spirit of the entire project, just to engage with blind and partially sighted people, because that's what it's all about. It's co-creation, co-design, and tackling the challenges in a collaborative way.
Now, we've heard a lot about the WeWalk Smart Cane 2 and other ideas, but we've also heard how great the WeWalk Smart Cane 2 is at solving mobility issues. How does it do it?
So the WeWalk Smart Cane 2 uses a range of sensors to collect information from the individual and the environment that they're in. So, for example, we're demoing just across the room. We're demoing head-height obstacles using kitchen doors to create a simulation. And really what we're doing is enabling people to use technology to give them more confidence, give them more freedom, and enable people to move around and explore their environment and maybe to discover some new horizons. It's all about pushing people's confidence up, giving people a lift, and enabling them to discover new experiences and potentially hold on to the hobbies, interests, and pastimes that people have had when they were sighted. It's all about enabling independence.
When it comes to a partnership like this one with WeWalk, how do you see it expanding and evolving?
What we'd love to do from today is to broaden the tent, as it were, and talk to more stakeholders. So we've had some great conversations with our friends at Guide Dogs, really to take, you know, the issue of mobility and access to the built environment and bring more people into that conversation and capture more experiences and actually filter those into the process that's about, you know, distilling all those ideas down and creating something that's synthesized and really representative and enables us to develop new products and solutions that give people more independence and more freedom.
A bit of a techie question, which would be good to end on. You know, this is a very exciting project. Out of probably hundreds of exciting projects you've been involved with, have you got a few highlight projects that excited you in a similar way?
Gosh, there are many projects we've been involved in. I mean, we work on everything in the team, from healthcare products through to chip and pin terminals, to ATMs, to smart TVs, you know, to metro systems where we're improving accessibility. So there are many. And then also there are some products that we work on that might be, on the face of it, potentially less exciting. Maybe showers, for example, ticket machines. I think the huge thing is enthusiasm and insight and co-design and co-creation. That's the super exciting element that flows throughout all of those projects.
Robin Spinks, Head of Inclusive Design at RNIB. We look forward to hearing how these projects will evolve and, well, many more projects that I'm sure we will be involved with too. Thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
My pleasure. I can't wait to see what we're doing 2 years from now.
And joining now is RNIB's Chief Executive, Matt Stringer. Matt, thank you for joining us.
No, my pleasure, Hugh. It's been a really good afternoon, so good to talk to you about it.
It's been fantastic because, you know, how important are, you know, these sorts of partnerships to help create a great impact?
No, they're massively important. I mean, this is a key area of our strategy, you know, travel and transport, helping people move around, because we know, you know, from all our work and our recent In My Way survey, you know, talks to a majority of blind and partially sighted people not feeling safe, 91% not feeling safe, you know, moving around the UK because of A-boards and street architecture and floating bus stops and all the other, you know, e-bikes on the pavement, all the things we know are part of modern life. And it doesn't make it easier for blind and partially sighted people to move around the UK, to hold down a job, to go to an education setting, to see friends and family, to pursue hobbies. So it's a big part of our strategy, and having the partnership with WeWalk and working with Imperial College, you know, and other partners in the sector, guide dogs have been a big part of today as well, you know, shows that actually, you know, the ability to come together with partners in the charity sector, in the commercial world, you know, to develop capabilities and materials which can really help, you know, tackle some of the big challenges that visually impaired people face. There's a massive sort of part of what we do, and we couldn't do it on our own. So it's been great to be able to host a meeting this afternoon, not only to show the power of partnership, but also to focus in on, you know, what looks like a really, really exciting sort of transport aid as well. So it's been great.
How do tools like WeWalk help support independence and mobility?
I mean, the technology is, I mean, ultimately we're talking about a cane. So obviously people will see blind and partially sighted people using a cane in its simplest form to help, you know, navigate, you know, streets and pavements as people move around. I mean, the clever thing about WeWalk, and they've gone through a few versions, we're coming up to version 3 at the moment, is increasingly sophisticated use of technology to be able to tell you what's around you, help you with planning navigation, be able to help you negotiate obstacles. It just is a completely sort of full package, you know, linked to your phone to enable a blind and partially sighted people to get around. I've just downloaded the app today, actually. I just plotted my route back to Caledonian Road and Barnsbury Station. You know, so the technology, you know, as we know all the time, is designed for blind and partially sighted people, but used by everybody. But though the cane, as I say, you know, at its simplest form is a cane, but actually has a technology to allow the user to get so much richer sources of information to aid their navigation around urban architecture.
How can you see this partnership evolving further?
Well, I think, as I said, you know, the RNIB, you know, last few years, I think we've been stepping up, really understanding the power of partnership, whether it's with charity sector partners, commercial partners, you know, working with other institutions, NHS, Royal Colleges, government, you know. So, you know, we need to be a good partner to make things happen, because whilst we're not a small organisation, we have a lot of capability, you know, on some of these big questions, we are genuinely sort of better together. So on this topic, you know, working with WeWork, who bring the technology, working with, you know, Imperial College, you bring the ability to, you know, look at the research and bring that strong academic focus. You know, we bring a ton of user insight that I just mentioned, for example, in the In My Way survey. And you can see how that sort of customer insight perspective linked to the technological development, linked to the academic rigor, you know, is a very powerful sort of combination. And I think, you know, we need to be now working with WeWalk to be putting, you know, these canes out in society and the technology out in society to get many more, you know, blind and partially sighted people able to navigate better than they are at the moment.
I mean, we've heard a lot about how WeWalk works and what it's capable of. How game-changing that sort of technology is, do you think, for blind and partially sighted people?
We have a lot of people use guide dogs. There's challenges on getting enough guide dogs out for all the users, quite a long waiting list. Guide dogs do a great job, but, you know, just challenges of supply and demand. And I think, you know, there's a lot more blind and partially sighted people who would want a solution which was maybe not having the responsibility of looking after an animal and being able to, you know, harness modern technology to, you know, do all the things I've just mentioned, you know, to be able to direction find, negotiate obstacles, you know, be aware of your surroundings, which technology can bring. And I think we can get this in the hands of people, when we know from what I just said about our recent survey, a lot of people are very anxious and don't feel safe going out. If we can get over that hurdle, I think it is game changing in terms of people living a much richer, full life.
Fantastic. Matt Stringer, RNIB's Chief Executive, thank you very much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
No, Hubert, my pleasure. It's been a really great couple of hours here at Grimaldi. So good to speak to you about it. Thank you.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We've had an interesting question come in from David on the emails. He says, I'm a JAWS 2025 user who's totally blind. I have a Selvus Q Braille 40 as my Braille display and keyboard. I'm wondering if anyone can suggest any Windows 11 tablets that could be usable. He says, I'm only looking to do basic tasks, such as reply to emails with Thunderbird and access my local library services. Does anyone have any suggestions? I've been intrigued by this as well, to be fair, Windows tablets. I hear a lot of good things about the Surface range, but I don't know. I think they're the more premium side.
I've used the Surface laptops, and if that's anything to go by, they are really good quality and they do work pretty well. So if the Surface tablets are anything to go by, if that's anything to go by, then I highly recommend.
Sorry, I'm out on this one because when it comes to tablets and stuff, I'm an Apple's girl. So I have an iPad and I tend to stick to kind of native apps. So I've not tried Thunderbirds. So I'm sorry, I'm utterly useless on this one.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, but I mean, I've got a Surface laptop for work, and I absolutely love it. I think it's quite funny. My colleagues are always complaining about it because apparently it's not the best with external displays, or at least the docking stations that we've got in the office work better with the other ranges of laptops that they do. But obviously, I don't care about that. I don't want a big chunky Lenovo. Thanks. I'm quite happy with this little Surface. It's great.
Is it portable, Callum?
Oh, yeah, very. It's tiny. It's kind of like MacBook Air type size. But that's the laptop version that I've got. It does have a touchscreen screen, but I wouldn't say it's a tablet, really. Although they're expensive, although they're pricey, unless anyone else has got any suggestions, we'll throw this out to the listeners, I think. But I would probably look at the Surface Pro. And the reason I say that is because that's kind of the iPad of the Microsoft world. What you would be getting there is everything kind of native from Microsoft, you know, Microsoft software and Microsoft hardware. You can kind of guarantee good performance with that, especially when you've got a screen reader on top. I'm sure there are cheaper options available, though. I like I said, I'm intrigued on this.
Chromebooks are the thing as well. What about Chromebooks? There is a screen reader, but I don't know what it's like. I did use a Chromebook. I had a good play with one a few years back, but I found it a bit limiting. It's all Google because it's a Chrome operating system. You can use some apps on it, but I'm not sure. I think maybe the Surface would be a better bet, unless somebody has got any other suggestions for us.
With the Surface in mind, it might be worth going along to some sort of computer store like Currys or something like that, because they tend to be pretty helpful, these places, and say, look, this is what I'm after. Would it be possible, you know, to have a demonstration or a bit of a play? Or even if you don't, just go along, if you phone them up and say, this is what I'd like to do, but it's an expensive bit of kit. I don't want to buy one and then find out it's not going to work for me. And they might be amenable to you just going along, having a bit of a play, and finding out for yourself what you think might work. But, you know, maybe having a look at the Surface, because that sounds like your best bet.
It's a good question, David. Thanks for that. And if you've got any suggestions on this one, because, as I said, Surface is premium, but I'm sure there's probably others out there that we're missing. So let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. An exciting way of turning images into accessible works of art now, as our very own Toby Davy has been hearing from the company behind the recent Touch Beyond Vision exhibition.
We find out now here on RNIB Connect Radio about how AI tools are being used to turn images into tactile artworks at the recent Touch Beyond Vision exhibition and event at the Oxo Tower in London. Carveco, the company behind the AI tools, showed how artworks can be brought to life for blind and partially sighted people through tactile relief artworks, along with braille notes and recorded audio description too. Robert Newman, Managing Director of Carveco, joins me now to tell me more about the AI tools that are being used to turn images into tactile, accessible artworks. Hello, Robert, and thank you so much indeed for joining me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, Toby. Thank you very much.
So firstly, Robert, tell me how the idea for using AI tools to produce images in a sort of 3D tactile form for blind and partially sighted people like myself to explore through touch came about.
We are a software company and we have been creating what's known as bas relief models, which is basically what is the behind tactile artworks. It's the lumpy bumpy artwork, the 2.5D model that's touchable, something that's more reminiscent with Greek or Italian Roman style artwork that you'd see on the side of a building. And we've been doing that for quite a number of years. So we're more prominently known in, for example, all the coins in the world use our software to design the artwork on it, which is very similar to the tactile artwork that we were displaying at the Touch Beyond Vision. And as we were developing AI technology for some of our customers, we thought, actually, there's a different use here. There's a bigger use, something that is more beneficial for other people. The ability to use AI technology as a positive rather than as it's seen most of the time as a negative. We thought, do you know what? Imagine if we could just import an image and take that image and just really turn it into a 3D model instantly. We thought, well, that's great for our high-end customers, but actually that's really beneficial for anybody with visual impairment. And we've been working very closely and made great friends with a gentleman called Chris Fisher, who's known as the Blind Woodturner, who we met many years back, and he's become a great friend of myself and of Carveco. And we've always had a lot of communication backwards and forwards. And through conversations with him, we thought, do you know what? Imagine what a difference this would make to somebody like Chris.
Wow. And how does it all work? Is it just a case of scanning an image and letting the software do the rest?
Yeah. So however you get the image, it needs to go into the software. So at the event on the day, people were airdropping photographs to us at the event and we were uploading it into the software. You could take it from a digital scan. It can be downloaded from the internet. But as it stands at the moment, we develop software and it's a Windows-based application and it would go into that software and then it goes into the software and the software automatically does the magic behind the scenes where you can make it as deep or as shallow and make the detail via slider bars as deep as you need to be, because we're aware that the depth of the layer of detail really makes a big difference to how much you can feel, especially as a visually impaired person. You know, really being able to feel the creases in faces, the depths of water or waves, really make a real difference to the impact of the model. And then it can be exported either a couple of ways. The ways for art galleries, which is one part that we've shown at the exhibition, but the other way is to 3D printers, which now are really accessible for people. They are a lot cheaper in price. And that was one of the things that was the biggest hit at the show. And one of the things we focused on more was people were sending us photographs at the exhibition and we were 3D printing them for them right there and then within about 45 minutes to an hour and 10 minutes. And people were leaving with their own personal photos. It was that quick to do.
Wow, that's incredible, because, you know, to be able to get something in a tactile form so quickly is absolutely sort of outstanding to me. And I suppose, you know, sort of with a tactile image, and for me as somebody who's registered blind and I've used tactile images in the past, I do need a bit of sort of, I suppose, introduction to the image in a way, and a bit of orientation to be able to explore and understand the image. Is that something that, you know, these tactile images will have? Is that something that software can do?
I mean, at the moment for the 3D printed models, what we've been doing is automatically dropping a dot in the top right hand corner so that people are aware of the orientation. So they know that the image is the correct way around for the 3D printed models. When it came to the actual artwork and the large scale artwork itself that we were displaying at the exhibition, and for that, we were trying to show what art galleries should be doing and could potentially do. And we tried a few new things with that. We showed the speed in which the models could be produced and the cost that they could be produced, which was relatively cheap to produce, and it's reproducible multiple times. But actually, we had a different take on a voiceover. And there were actually a couple of people who do voiceovers for art galleries who did come to the exhibition and were very interested in the way that we described. And what we did in that was we started you in a specific corner and the voiceover talked you through, move your hand down from the top left, and you will now feel the expression, which feels like a smile on, and you can feel the bristles on the mustache above the top lip. And if you move across to the right, you will feel a, and it was really interesting because you were hearing, oh wow, yes, you can feel that, oh, it does feel like that. And we got so many comments on the positivity of our voiceovers, and that they hadn't heard anything quite like the descriptiveness of the voiceovers. And we did that with the assistance of AI script, but the actual voice was covered by one of our own employees. But actually, technology itself now is at the point where AI could automatically do all of those sorts of things. We haven't produced our technology to do that, but actually it is capable. AI has the technology and the capability to be able to describe an image and lead your hand through a image itself and walk you through those steps. It's very clever now.
And sometimes with a tactile image, it's not necessarily, I suppose, the same as the visual image. Sometimes elements need to be slightly differently arranged or brought closer together to make it easier for somebody exploring the tactile image through touch. Is that something that the software does as well?
So what our software does is, from a photograph, it takes a true representation. So there is no manipulation on there. But because we have a lot of experience in, for example, the world of coin design and other bas relief design, our AI has been based upon the historical knowledge. So things like the height of noses, the height of cheeks, the way that eyes are inset, eyebrows, we take a lot of the historical knowledge that we have to make sure that those elements of facial features are defined in a way that it's easy for you to understand exactly what those elements are and the gap and the depth and the distance between them as well.
Oh, that's great. Because I think that's that thing. It's making sure that something feels easy and is a true representation. And sometimes that's slightly different to the actual image. And you had a mural wall, I believe, at the exhibition and an event where people's images that they had given you were turned into the tactile images and put up. And that, I believe, some people were really impressed with them.
Yeah, it was a really interesting and exciting process to do, because we wanted to show that the AI technology could take images of any sort, whether it was artwork or personal images, and turn it into a 3D tactile model. And what we wanted to do was to prove that. So we asked members of the public via different Facebook groups or by reaching out to different people and asking them if they would kindly submit their images to be part of a art exhibition where we would 3D print the models and they would be on display at the art exhibition, and we would send those 3D models to them afterwards. And we had a real mix of images, quality, some from the 1980s, some more modern times come through. I think there was an even older one which has Princess Anne in and a young schoolboy, which has got to be going back to maybe the 60s or 70s in there. So a very old image, across to some new ones. And we've got some really lovely personal stories about the image. And one woman even submitted it from the United States, who is a blind ballet teacher at the Baltimore School of Ballet. She's a ballet dancer. While she was in London, she also made sure she went to the Royal Ballet as well. But she came to the exhibition to see her artwork on display and sent us a lovely email following it. And almost all the images, when people felt themselves, their images, the tears, the emotion that came to them, it was what we hoped for. I'm going to say not the tears necessarily. You always hope that people are emotive and enjoy what they have, and that the tears and the emotion was absolutely wonderful. But you were hoping that people could truly feel, and the proof was on the wall of what could be done from what they sent us. And people were constantly going back to the artwork and to their images to feel it. And the mural wall probably had the most interest because it was people's personal lives. It was their personal stories. And the image that really stuck out to me, and I wasn't expecting it, was a dog, an image of a person's previous guide dog. Absolutely lovely gentleman who couldn't make it to the exhibition. And he submitted the image to us to put on display. And that really struck with a lot of people who are visually impaired, about the importance of their guide dog, about the importance of having a connectivity again with the guide dog. Yes, they may be on their second dog or third dog, but again, being able to still remember and connect with that dog. That one stuck out to us as a really strong importance. And we know we're going to get a number of images from people on guide dogs themselves, or people are going to be printing their own guide dog images.
I was going to ask you this because I use AI quite a lot to describe and bring photos to life for me. And will there be a time when I could maybe have the AI tools or software on my smartphone scan one of my photographs and then have it printed in 3D at home?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, we are just a Windows app-based system. But based off the success of this, we are currently now looking at what's next, what the next level is. We want to make it as accessible for people as possible, whether it's an upload service, whether it's just a direct connect to a 3D printer for people. We are surprisingly aware how many visually impaired people have 3D printers at home. And, you know, the technology is quite accessible, and we want to make sure that the solutions that we provide are very, very accessible to everybody as well. And we want to make sure, and this was really, really interesting. A lot of people said, we don't have any pictures or artwork in our homes because we can't see them. But now we feel like we're going to have lots of tactile artwork everywhere. And that was just lovely to hear.
Oh, it's amazing. That's amazing. And if listeners would like to find out more about Carveco and your AI tools, where can they go to find out more?
They can go to our website on www.carveco.com. But importantly, the exhibition itself was called Touch Beyond Vision. And we've still got the website for www.touchbeyondvision.com live, where we're going to be posting a lot more information. And we are looking, because we've been requested, about where the exhibition will move to next. And we're thinking we've got a lot of artwork there which we want other people to experience. So we're looking at what the next stage is for Touch Beyond Vision as really its own brand, and what galleries it can move into or move around. Because we think that really getting this message out and making sure that it is accessible to more visually impaired people. It was just a one-day exhibition in London. We'd like to have it sited somewhere for a month or two and then maybe move around again. So it's something that more people can get to.
Wow. Well, thank you very much indeed, Robert, for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me more about Carveco and your AI tools that are turning images into tactile artworks.
Thank you, Toby.
And that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in and being with us. If you like what you've heard, or if you've got any comments or anything you want to share with us, drop us an email or a voice note to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. It's your show, as we always say, and we always love to hear from you. We'll be back with you same time next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown, and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.